Professor, give me name. I'm going to start recording here. Give me name and title so I can check levels, make sure we can hear you okay.
Sure. My name is Matthew Brashears, and I'm an assistant professor of sociology at Cornell University.
And I'm going to say, Brashears, am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, Brashears, exactly.
Yeah, perfect. All right. And we are talking about social networks that might be harnessed to fight crime and terror. You're just launching on a study of this issue. Tell us about what you're going to be studying.
Well, this is sort of an ongoing and growing issue in social science. The problem here is that you have groups of people who are combining to achieve objectives that we would think of as criminal or dangerous behavior. So terrorist cells are one example, human trafficking rings, drug smuggling, you know, a whole variety of things that we would like to put to a stop. Now, the trick here is these are not individual behaviors, so it's not like the lone mugger who grabs your purse, but it's a highly coordinated activity of a group of people. And, of course, it has to be kept covert. You know, drug smugglers can't put ads in the phone book when they need mules or something. They have to keep it quiet. So what we're hoping to do is to develop techniques for locating these organized groups of people that are engaging in some of these behaviors.
And this isn't bad guys using these collaborative tools to actually collaborate to essentially get better at being bad guys. This is different than that, right?
Well, whenever I talk to people about social networking, there's immediately this assumption that what I'm thinking about is something like Facebook,
right?
How most people are familiar with it. Social networks is a research area in sociology and social science that's been around for decades at this point. So it predates Facebook quite a bit. A social network doesn't have anything to do with Facebook or the like necessarily. It can just be you have your group of friends, you have your group of confidants, and you pass information and social support back and forth in that network. You have your coworkers that you spend time with. You learn about things from them and vice versa. And similarly, a terrorist organization is, among other things, a social network. There's a set of links that define it. What makes it especially interesting to us is, in contrast to, say, a military organization or a traditional corporation, is not necessarily hierarchically organized. There are not necessarily formal chains of command in quite the same way, but rather it's a more loosely structured, you know, network form of organization.
They're a network in almost the truest sense of the word.
Right. So they're using networks, but it's not necessarily networks in the sense of online networks or networking tools, but rather they're using decentralized cellular kinds of organization which resemble informal social networks.
And it has always struck me that that the bad guys do a very good job of tapping into those networks in a way that good guys either aren't able to or don't. I've never been exactly sure which. And is there a reason for that?
Well, I'm not sure that they're necessarily better at tapping into them than we are, but the fundamental problem is a social network is difficult to detect. You know, with a traditional military organization, you know, it requires the support of a state, typically, or if it's not state-supported, there's a lot of equipment, there's a particular way that people organize, particular group structures, they're pretty obvious. If you have, you know, five or six guys who are part of a terror cell that infiltrate a country separately, and then sort of communicate through otherwise normal channels of communication, how, you know, what's your big sign for locating it? So I'm not sure it's that they use them better. It's just that the techniques for finding them when they're using these kinds of methods are, you know, not as well developed.
And has this become, it's become more complex to try and track these criminal activities because of this network approach where, I mean, it's kind of like Al-Qaeda. We take out one part of it, but it still seems to continue and almost even grow in some ways.
Absolutely. Well, the great thing about a decentralized structure is you can take out parts of it, but that doesn't mean you can kill the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a national command structure where if you take out the generals and the civilian leadership, then the army doesn't know what to do. I mean, each of these cells is capable of reorganizing on its own, potentially.
So the goal of your study is to actually come up with ways of finding ways to uncover these and to track it or to know that it's going on. What's the goal of your three-year study?
Well, the goal on a general level is to develop ways of finding covert social networks, which is sort of the general class of these things. And you can liken this to the sort of needle in a haystack problem.
Right.
So you've got lots and lots and lots and lots of people and lots of social networks, and there's a small fraction of those that we're actually interested in. So we're trying to come up with some way of sort of narrowing the field so that we can quickly and efficiently zero in on the people that are actually of interest, that may actually provide points of entry into these kinds of social networks.
And this is a problem that we see a lot in all sorts of different situations today, where you are trying to find those needles and make those connections that give you the knowledge to then take action.
Exactly right.
How do you go about studying this? How do you go about, what's the process that you go through over the next, 3 years?
The next 3 years.
Well, what's the next three years of your life going to be like?
Yeah. We're going to use a succession of data sets. The first data set, and this may amuse some of your listeners, is we're actually going to use data that's already been collected on American high school students.
Huh.
Now, the reason for this is not that high school students are like terrorists, although their parents may sometimes disagree with us on that. The reason is because we have lots of information on them. We have lots of detailed network information on them as well. This is only in certain specific high schools. Please don't take this to mean that we're somehow surveilling all high school students, because that's absolutely not the case. But using this data set, what we can essentially do is say, all right, well, these students are not hiding from us. We know very much what their social networks look like, and we can tell that some of these students are doing things that are deviant, but are only sort of deviant.
Hmm.
So some of them are smoking some joints or engaging in some sexual activity. I'm not here to judge, but things that their parents may or may not necessarily,
they probably like to at least know about.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So they're hiding these things, and they may be doing some of these activities in groups. Teenagers, they're not just smoking a joint by themselves, but are doing it with their buddies, so to speak. So what we're going to try and do is develop some methods to find those sort of deviant networks of teenagers from within this overall set. And the reason we're starting there is because while we have a lot of network information on terror cells that have tried to carry out various attacks, so the Madrid bombings, the September 11th attacks, and so on and so forth, the problem there is it's information that we've been able to uncover using the traditional means that we have available to us. We have no way of knowing whether or not we found everyone who's really important. We have no way of knowing if our data is completely accurate. That's just the section we've discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we assume that data is perfect, that there are no omitted individuals, that we have the whole networks that we're interested in, then what we're saying is, if we develop techniques using just those networks of terrorists, then we're developing new methods of finding terrorists using data from the terrorists that we're bad enough at it, we already found them in a way.
Hmm.
So we want to try to get away from that particular blind alley and work our way up from a slightly different starting point.
Wow. And 3 years, it's hard for me to imagine where I'm going to be a week after next, let alone 3 years from now. It seems like a long time.
It is. Well, and the thing with science that makes it exciting and difficult is, we have a plan for how the next 3 years of research is going to progress, with what kinds of data we're going to collect at different stages and what kinds of analysis we're going to carry out. But you never really know where the process is going to lead. So we may very well end up going in a completely different direction. My PhD student working with me, Michael Jenkin, is a really smart guy. I like to think of myself as a smart guy. We're really excited about this, but we may be very surprised at exactly, what we've ended up doing in 3 years based on what seems to be yielding the best of results.
We'd love to follow up and talk to you as you go through and hear how things evolve over time, what lessons you're learning even as you do the research.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Anything else I didn't ask you about that I should have?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I guess the only thing I'd ask is that, one, if at all possible, that you mention my PhD student's name, Mike Jenkin, on the air. He's going to be out on the job market fairly soon, so all exposure is good for him.
Yeah,
right,
absolutely.
And then the other thing is I wanted to stress that what we're engaging in is not sort of just another iteration on the sort of profiling methods.
That was one of my notes, and I forgot to ask about it, because I think some people might hear this and say, hold on, is this just profiling to some degree? But it's different than that, isn't it?
It is. It's more complicated, and it should be more precise. The thing with profiling is it's a blunt instrument to a large extent, and what we're trying to do here is not refine profiling, but we're trying to get away from it altogether and come up with something that really picks up just the folks that we should be concerned about and doesn't force this sort of mass harassment of a whole lot of people that are, we shouldn't be concerned about. Obviously, that's not a productive strategy for
right.
anyone.
And this seems like hopefully what you learn from this can be used in all sorts of different. I mean, I know the Defense Threat Reduction Agency is looking at terrorists, but it seems like TSA might be able to use some of the lessons that you are able to collect to garner for the terrorist watch list or things like that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, we're studying covert social networks. You know, a covert social network is a terrorist network, but it can also be a criminal network of any of a variety of different kinds. And the techniques we're developing here should be broadly applicable to all of these different kinds of potentially dangerous, potentially harmful groups, not just terrorists. You know, that's one thing that the Defense Threat Reduction Agency was interested in, that this work that we're doing not just be focused very narrowly on terrorists, but also have potential applications in these other areas. So I think we could, you know, if depending on what we find, depending on how successful we are and how other researchers in the field do, you know, we could see a substantial improvement in the ability of law enforcement and counterintelligence efforts to, you know, locate the bad guys.
Absolutely. Perfect. I'm going to stop right there. I will make sure.